Have you guys had a great weekend? It's been really good, hasn't it? Really good to be here. Really appreciate Luke and Jeremy and all the people who volunteered their time. Appreciate your youth ministers and your chaperones and the people who brought you over here to participate in these sessions. And I know I've been really blessed to be here. Just so thankful for the opportunity to share this weekend with you guys and to participate in Deeper, and especially honored to get to speak to you this one last time. So I heard a story about this family, and they had some people over from church for lunch one Sunday. And it's one of those big deals, you know, you want to kind of make a good impression. And so they had this other family come over and join them for lunch. And the family who was hosting had a young son named Aiden. And, you know, like sometimes, did your parents ever do this where they ask you to say the prayer because you want to kind of make a good impression on the visitors? You know, they might say, would you like to say the prayer? And that's what they did. They said to little Aiden, Aiden, would you like to say the prayer for the meal? Mm-mm. Aiden, why don't you say the prayer for lunch? Why don't you say the prayer? You know that you can do this. Why don't you go ahead and say the prayer for lunch? Aiden, not having it, not doing it. And so they kind of persisted and kept asking, and Aiden kept saying no. And finally they said, well, you know, it's really easy. Don't you remember this morning when Daddy said the prayer? Mm-hmm. You know how Daddy said the prayer? So what you do is you put your hands together and you say, Dear God, and then you just say the same thing that you heard Daddy say this morning. And Aiden said, okay. And so everybody bowed their heads and they put their hands together. And Aiden led the prayer and he said, Dear God, why did we have to have these awful people over for lunch today? A little rough, right? You got to be very careful when you're choosing someone to be your spokesperson. I mean, have you ever had anyone who tried to speak on your behalf and just said, oh, this is what he thinks, or this is what she thinks? I mean, people do this to each other all the time, don't they? And we kind of subdivide it into all your categories, like, you know, I'm a white person. Well, white people think, or men all think, or ministers all think. And I don't know about you, but I don't like it when people try to put me in a box and tell everybody else what I think. I want to speak my own words. I want to have my own opinions. I bet you're the same way. But isn't it amazing that God has invited us to be His spokespeople? That we're the ones who get to speak on behalf of God to the world. What an incredible privilege and an incredible responsibility. And I think I don't want anyone talking for me. Why would God ever dream of letting us talk for Him? But just the same, it's what He's chosen to do. It's the way that God's choosing to work in the world. When you think about Moses, when you think about any of the people who God asked to speak for Him, inevitably they were very nervous about it. You remember that conversation at the burning bush where God appears to Moses and, you know, he has to take his sandals off because he's on holy ground and he has to be careful how close he gets to the burning bush. But God starts talking to him about some of his different responsibilities. Now, if I told you on the one hand, if I came to you and said, how would you like to be the person who's going to go to a group of people who are living in slavery and let them know that they're going to be freed from their slavery, and you're going to get to lead them into a new place and a new inheritance, and they're going to come into a much better life. Now that part sounds good, doesn't it? Like, I would like to bring people good news that they're going to be free, but there's some other parts of Moses' job that sounded a little rougher. You know, he had to go back to Egypt where he'd fled from many, many years ago. Could have been like a wanted fugitive back there because he'd killed a couple of guys before he left, right? You remember that story how Moses had to flee out of Egypt? Pretty scary to go back there, and you're not just going to get to go walk up to the slaves and tell them that they're free without dealing with the guy who owns the slaves. And so Moses is going to have to go back and talk to Pharaoh and confront him and challenge him and say, you got to let God's people go. God says, let my people go. Now, that's a little bit of a scarier job, isn't it? When you got to go to the guy who could have your head chopped off and tell him what it is he's supposed to be doing. That's quite a bit more intimidating. And so Moses starts making excuse after excuse. And there's a lot of different ways he gets at it. I mean, it's kind of, well, you know, you're unfamiliar to them. So how are they going to know which God you are? How are they going to know your name, God? How do they know which God you're talking about? And so God kind of works with him through that. Well, even if they know who you are, why are they ever going to believe that I'm the one who's talking for you? How do they know I'm your spokesperson? And God says, well, here, I'm going to give you this sign and that sign, and there's some things you're going to do, and it's going to, you know, confirm that, yeah, I really have sent you to speak on my behalf. And again, he just keeps making excuses, and eventually he gets to that one about how, well, you know, I don't talk very well. And we've kind of speculated over the centuries, did Moses perhaps, did he have like a stuttering problem, or was it a speech impediment? And I'm going to be honest with you, I just think Moses was making the same lame excuse that everybody makes who's afraid of public speaking, right? Like, I don't think I talk that well, I don't want to get up there and do that. It's kind of scary to think about having to talk, and what if I say something wrong? But the reason I believe that, you know the book of Deuteronomy? You know how Moses said he doesn't talk very good? The whole big whopping book of Deuteronomy is one long Moses sermon, right? So this is a guy who can clearly talk. But just the same, he was nervous about it when he was new to this. He was nervous about trying to represent God to the people. I want to read a couple of passages. As God came to Moses and said, I want you to be my spokesperson, there's a couple of things that are very clear that God wanted accomplished. It says, God spoke to Moses and said to him, I am the Lord. I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob as God Almighty. But by my name, the Lord, that's Yahweh or Jehovah, I did not make myself known to them. I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land in which they lived as sojourners. So part one of that is God really wants people to know who he is. There's only one true God. He wants to make sure they know that it's him. Skipping down to verse 6, it says, say therefore to the people of Israel, I am the Lord. I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from slavery to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great acts of judgment. So God wants everyone to know who he is, but he also wants people to know the things that he's been doing, that God is in the business of saving people. So the hard part about this is, it sounds great, yeah, I want God to save people, I want God to rescue us, I want God to make things easy, but the way that God's choosing to communicate and do these things, it's through us. That was true for Moses and his generation, it was true for Jesus and his apostles and his disciples and for the church, and you know, we are a continuation of that unbroken chain, where now the way that God is going to reach people in your family, the way that God is going to reach people at your school, in your neighborhood, he's going to do it through you. God wants to reach people through us. And I have to tell you, in my life, you know, one of the greatest privileges, one of the deepest blessings have been times when I'm so aware of how imperfect I am, but I've been able to tell that maybe, just maybe, God actually did something that helped through me. And you're going to get to have that experience too. One of the hardest moments in my ministry, several years ago, I actually was at Henderson, Tennessee. I was at Fried Hardeman at the lectureship that year. I had grandparents who lived in Henderson. And I had gone to visit my grandparents, and I was going to go to the lectureship with my grandfather. And we had a close friend at our church named Lee Allen. Lee Allen, I can't remember if she was 23 or 24 years old, but Lee Allen had cystic fibrosis. And if you don't know what that is, it's a terminal disease. It's a condition with like your lungs, and it affects other parts of your body. But years and years ago, children who had cystic fibrosis didn't live to be past, you know, 5 or 6 years old. And so with modern advances in medicine, they can live a lot longer. But Lee Allen lived into her early 20s. And while I was there, I got the phone call that Lee Allen just suddenly, she had been kind of getting weaker and weaker, but suddenly she had passed away. She was there with her parents at home. She was in the bathroom. She kind of fell over. She started having blood come out of her mouth. And she looked over at her mom and dad and said, Mom, I'm going to die tonight. Like, she knew it was happening and said, you know, call an ambulance. And so there's this, you know, really dramatic family moment there at their house where she's kind of on the floor. And I'm sorry, I'm getting emotional, but everybody's screaming, I love you, I love you. And it was this hard moment. And so I got the phone call. And this girl happens to be my wife's best friend at the time. So I get the phone call about Lee Allen, and I told my grandparents, I'm sorry, I'm not going to get to finish. I've got to go back to Nashville. And so I drove back there, and I drove straight to their house. And I got to tell you, I felt so inadequate for the task. You know, what do you say to parents who have just gone through that with their child? I don't have the wisdom for how to fix it. I don't know how to solve it. And so before I went into the house, I sat there and I prayed, God, I am not worthy to be your spokesperson. I don't have the power to heal this loss. And I'm an imperfect servant. but right now I really hope you will do something through me to help these people. And that's a good prayer for you to pray in those situations. God, I know that I don't have what it takes, but I know that if you want to, you could use me for something. And so as I walked into the house, I started praying silently to myself as I went up. The dad and I embraced each other. We're good friends, and I hugged him really tight, probably 2 or 3 minutes before either of us let go. And we were both crying together, and I kept praying, God, please hug him right now through my arms. Hug him through my arms and cry with him through my tears. And if you can find a way, speak to him through my words. But, you know, I'm not a good enough servant to deserve this. But right now, I was able to look at myself and say, you know, this is, somebody's got to show up and be the presence of God in this situation. And it's not anything special about me that means I get to do that. It's because God chooses to work through imperfect people like us. And if you make yourself available to people, if you're willing to love people in their darkest times and even in the good times, God can and He does work through people in powerful, powerful ways. So the great privilege of Christianity is that the way that God is going to spread His love to the world, the way that God's Spirit is going to change the world, it is going to be through your actions. It's going to be through your hands and through your feet. God's going to speak to people through your words, and if you don't do it, God will raise up someone else. But God is not going to just zip down into history and interrupt everything that's going on. God has chosen the way that He wants to reach people is through people exactly like us. I wanted to show you this piece of artwork. It's by a guy named Ron DeCiani, and it's called The Legacy. This is one of my favorite images for what it means to be a Christian. And I know it's a preacher there on the stage, but I really think you should insert yourself in the role of that guy in the front and think about what it means to be a Christian. When you try to speak on God's behalf, when you try to encourage people to obey the gospel, look at all these people who surround him, and maybe you can start recognizing some of them. You know, you can kind of see the angels there in the corners. You can see a guy who looks like John the Baptist. You can see a fisherman. Maybe that's Peter. You can see figures like the high priest, like Moses. You see Moses on the side. You see Jesus himself standing there with his hand on his shoulder. Do you understand that when you're speaking on God's behalf, when you're trying really hard to represent God as a Christian, you're surrounded by really good people? Some of the best people who've lived in human history have stepped up and just, they felt all the same things that you feel. I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not sure exactly what to say. And God, I may mess this up. But just the same, God is the one who stands there beside us and says, no, but it doesn't matter that you're not good enough or don't know enough, because I'm gonna help you. And I want you to do this, because when you push yourself, this is how you grow. This is how you become more like me. So I want you to try it anyways. Just step up and see what you can do, and know that I'm going to be there with you. All of these great servants of God suffer times of fear and serious self-doubt, and often failures as well. I think I saw on one of your previous shirts from a different, deeper conference, 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 7. But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the surpassing power belongs to God and not to us. A jar made out of clay, you would never ship anything in that, would you? You know, if you're going to ship something through the post office to another state, you're going to wrap it in plastic and bubble wrap and cardboard inside more cardboard. You never dream of taking something really precious and trying to transport it in something like a clay pot or a clay jar. I mean, they're fragile, aren't they? If you've got a clay pot you made in art class and you drop it on the floor, it's fragile. It falls apart. It breaks. If you don't make it really well, it could easily be a leaky vessel. There's a lot of ways that we're like that, aren't we? I mean, I wish I was this perfect, magnificent vessel for God, but some of the time, you know, we're kind of fragile. You know, we fall down and we get hurt and we mess up. Sometimes we're like that leaky vessel where I wish I really kept the message of God all together, but I forget things. I don't always keep things together. So we slip and we're vulnerable, but just the same, it is in these clay jars, it is in people formed by God, that God is going to do things in this world. And so I think for all of us, we have to ask that same question that Moses was asking. Do you remember that when Moses said, how are they ever going to know that I'm the one who's your representative? How are they going to know that my message is the true message? Because don't we all worry about that? If I'm going to represent God, how are people going to know that they can trust what I'm saying. John chapter 13, in the verse 34, Jesus says, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." So what is the sign? I mean, Moses got to do cool stuff with serpents and staffs and all this stuff. But God's sign now, today, God's sign to people that we really are His people and His messengers, it's all about the love that we show for each other. If we could go to that next slide, I want you to think about this statement. Our love is the currency with which God buys credibility in the eyes of the world. I want you to think about that again. Our love is the currency with which God buys credibility in the eyes of the world. So what is currency? It's like money, right? Currency is something valuable that you can exchange for something else. And when you talk about credibility, you're saying that something that people would believe and that people would trust. And so the way that God buys trust in the eyes of the world is going to be through your love. Because the greater your love is, the greater your mercy and compassion are, the more people can see that you really are God's person. It's not just our love. It's God's Spirit working through us. There's a lot of great things that we could say about the love of God. And in fact, I would say that the love of God is one of those subjects that it's like the more you study it, the more interesting it gets. It doesn't get dry. It's a well that always just goes deeper and deeper. There's a lot of powerful things that we could compare the love of God to. You would say that the love of God is kind of like those five loaves and two fish from John chapter 6, when Jesus took just a few things and He blessed them and He broke them and then He spread them out. But do you remember that after the feeding of those 5,000 people, they didn't run out of anything. In fact, they collected 12 huge baskets full at the end. They started off with just a little bit, and even after feeding an army of people, they ended up with so much more than they started with. This is a great thing about the love of God, is that no matter how much of it you give away, you only end up having more of it. It's something that multiplies when you give it. You can share it as much as you want, and you're never going to run out of it. God wants to see us do beautiful things, lavish things with His love, to be generous with His love. So when you see someone who's hurting, when you see someone who needs a friend, when you see an opportunity to encourage someone, give away some of the love of God, because God's just going to fill you right back up, and very often it'll come back to you because of the things that you've done. God's love is like those multiplying loaves of bread. God's love is also like a seed. It's like a seed that is planted. Some would say it's like the seed that dies and then rises again. You know, you put the seed in the ground and it's as good as dead, like when you've buried it, but then plants and new life and fruit and vegetables, all kinds of things come from a seed when you put it in the ground and allow it to grow into something new. Our lives are like that too. There's a lot of different ways that we try to die to ourselves so that we can say yes to God. Now this weekend, there's a lot of different ways you could have spent a weekend, but you chose to give of your time to be here, to study God's Word, to try and strengthen your walk as a Christian. You chose to die to this weekend by being here so that God can raise up something new and beautiful within you. Sometimes you might choose to give up some other free time. You might give up something that you have so that someone else can have a little bit more. So we die to our agendas. Sometimes we die to our ambitions. There's a lot of different ways we do that, but when we give of ourselves, God raises it into something better. So we die so that something better could come. So God's love is like that seed that is planted and rises again. As you think about your service as a Christian and the efforts that you make to share the love of God, I want to encourage you, I hope this terminology will make sense, but I want to encourage you never to devalue what I would call being like a secondary cause. So like what I mean by that is, everything kind of starts with God, right? Like God is the one who creates the world and starts His mission and starts the story. And for us, like we're way further down on the chain, right? God has done an awful lot of stuff before we ever got here. But don't ever believe for a second that just because you're at this point in history, that the stuff you're doing is therefore unimportant. Because right now, in our time, you are the church. You are the leaders of the church. You are the one that people are going to have to turn to know what it is that God does and God cares about. I think it's unfortunate that sometimes when we talk about our Christian service, like the way that we convince ourselves to do more for God is to try and say that it isn't worth anything. Well, you know, I'm going to give up the weekend for God, but yeah, you know, what's a weekend? I shouldn't care so much about giving that up. Or, well, you know, I'm going to go have that conversation with my friend and I'm going to invite him to church. Or maybe I've got a Christian friend I need to kind of call and say, hey, I'm worried about you and I'm uncomfortable doing that. But, you know, it's a phone call, it's not that big of a deal. You know, I really think that God doesn't devalue us when we do things for Him. Jesus taught that even someone who gives another person a cup of cold water for His sake, it's something that He's going to remember and to reward and to celebrate. Now, I don't know about y'all, but you know, like when you go to a restaurant, if you're cheap, what do you order to drink? You get water, right? Because it's free. Jesus says, even if you give someone a cup of water for My sake, that matters to Me. So anything that you do for the sake of Christ, I want to encourage you never to just say, well, it doesn't really matter. No, you chose to be here this weekend. You've chose to participate in classes. You've chose to do a lot of things as a Christian, and I know that God is honored by that and would celebrate that with you. And along the way, when you think about this chain, like you never know exactly what role you're going to play. Have you ever considered that there are some people in your life and maybe they don't know Christ and you're trying to influence them for Christ, and maybe in the scope of history, it's going to take like 20 people to invite that person to church before they'll finally say yes. And your job in their life might be that you're going to be person number 15. So for the 15th time, you're going to say, hey, I'd like you to come to my church, and they're going to say no. But, you know, five more times down the road, God might finally get them. But don't tell me that links number 1 through 19 are therefore unimportant just because it took that final time before they said yes. Yeah, don't ever devalue the ways that God can work through you. Jesus gave for us what was costly. Reflecting on what it's like to be us, to be God's people, have you ever heard of this pottery? It's called kintsugi pottery. It's this Japanese thing. And what happens is, they didn't want to throw away a piece of pottery or a bowl that had been broken. So what would happen is, if a bowl fell on the floor and was broken, the way that they'll sometimes repair it is that they'll either take gold or platinum or some kind of a precious metal, and they'll put it back together using a precious metal. And what people like about this pottery is that they'll say, you know, it was an okay bowl before, but because of the way it's been healed and brought back together, isn't it even more beautiful now than when it started? It's actually a more beautiful bowl because it was broken and it was also healed. And that's the way that we are. We're imperfect vessels. We're like jars of clay, but because we've been broken and because God has healed us and gotten us into a better place, our light can shine even more brightly. We're even more beautiful because we've been broken, because now God's love is something that shines through us that people can see. So as we move forward from here, one of our challenges is to try and take this all back with us and to try and be a voice for God and our friends and our family. Do you ever hold back because you're worried what people are going to think about you as a Christian? Anyone ever been accused of being like a goody two-shoes? I used to get accused of that. I always hated that. You know, people will say you're just a goody two-shoes or a goody-goody, or I don't really want to talk to you because you're just going to be Christian boy or whatever they'll say about you. You know, people like to devalue you. There's this Chinese saying about how it's always the tallest blade of grass that gets cut. And so sometimes as a Christian, the way we might think to ourselves is, well, I don't want to stand out too much because I'm afraid somebody's going to just cut me back down to size. But if that's the picture that you're hanging on to in your head, I think Paul would tell us that's the wrong way to think about this. Paul says that as we go about life, like as these jars of clay carrying the treasures of God, he says we are supposed to shine like stars in the sky. Stars are bright. They stand out against the darkness. They're even brighter because of the darkness. And this is what it is that we're trying to do, to give something valuable, to stand out where people can see us. So a question I'd invite you to be thinking about is, in your life, of all the things you could be doing, what is it you could do that would illuminate and inspire? It's not about being a goody two-shoes. It's not about being the tallest blade of grass that someone's going to cut back down to size. But really, you need to stand out against the darkness so that people can see you. You need to be conspicuously different so that people know you have a different set of priorities. There's a different way that you choose to make decisions in your life. There's a different person that you're living for. And we've got to figure out in every situation, how is it that I can let God's light shine through me? So you guys are now mostly youth group age, some of you college age. Do you remember what it was like to be like a 7 or 8 year old kid at your church and look at people who were teenagers? You remember that? What did you think about the people who were teenagers? Man, they were it, right? Like, when you look at the kids that are teenagers, and like especially once you started driving, I remember thinking about them. The guys were the strongest and the fastest and the most athletic, and I wanted to be exactly like them. And the girls are the most beautiful, and you kind of have a crush on all of them. Y'all understand that now that you're teenagers, what those people used to be to you, you are now to the generation behind you. Those kids that are 6 or 7 years younger than you look up to you just exactly the way that you did to those kids who were just a little bit in front of you by a few years. Think about what impact it would have had on you as a younger child if someone your age had come up to you and just said, you know, I'm really happy that you go to our church. What if someone, did you remember when someone who was older than you that you thought was really cool, like, did they ever call you by name? Like, wow, that guy's super cool and he knows what my name is. She knows who I am, who she actually talked to me today. Y'all can have such an incredible impact on the kids just a little bit younger than you who think that you are now the most amazing people in their lives. Don't ever devalue the impact that you can have when you let your light shine brightly. So we've got a lot of things. I know you guys have been in a lot of class sessions. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of ideas we've been thinking through. But what we're going to do to close out this session, I'm going to invite our youth ministers and our chaperones, if you would kind of like make your way close to the aisles and just kind of be standing there in a second. And what we're going to do is, while we sing the last songs, if you just wanted to go talk to someone, a youth minister, chaperone, someone that you respect, and you'd like them to talk to you or to pray with you, you know, maybe you've got something in your heart you're just really convicted by over this weekend, and you say, I'd like someone to pray with me so I can work on that. And maybe it's not something you feel guilty about. Maybe you're just saying, you know, I need to have a little more courage, and I think it would help me some if someone would talk to me or pray with me. I'm going to be inviting our youth ministers, chaperones, to be kind of positioned in the aisles. I'll be standing up here up front, and while we sing these last song or two, if you want to come talk to one of us while we do that, we just want to be available to you. So that's how we're going to close out this session. So really appreciate the opportunity. But yeah, let's go ahead and be standing. And if you want to come talk to somebody or have someone pray over you while we sing these songs, we're happy to do that.